And welcome to the British Society for Heart Failure podcast series. I'm Maggie Simpson. This is the second of two podcasts featuring Pauline O'Shea and Robbie Panton. In our first podcast, they gave us an insight into what it's like to live with heart failure, the physical and psychological impact. We will now discuss what matters to them when engaging with healthcare professionals, the British Society for Heart Failure Effort campaign, and what Pauline and Robbie want us to know about living with heart failure. So, Pauline and Robbie, you will have had lots of interactions with healthcare professionals over the last few years. What has mattered most to you in those interactions? Robbie?
Yeah, as you said, I think that we've both seen lots of different healthcare professionals over previous years. And they say, fortunate enough, my experience has been phenomenal. And that's the only word I can use, because I hear different stories from different people about their experiences of hospitals or different places they go to see different people. But in terms of going Jubilee and even Monklands Hospital from a heart failure nurse, both teams at both sort of hospitals have got this sort of ability to focus on you as a person. And for me, that's the most crucial thing they can do. So I think that the different methods that each individual sort of uses to talk to you, or even just welcome you into your room, that sort of the acknowledgement. And it's a very strange situation. The last time I was at the Jubilee, and it'll remain me with for a long, long time, then I was walking through the corridor with a mask on, and one of the consultants who I see was walking down with his mask on. And so basically all we saw was the eyes and the hair up, but he saw me and I saw him. And it was just that sort of time where he stopped and asked how I was doing. And it's a very strange thing, because you walk past tens, maybe hundreds of people every day, but that sort of acknowledgement from somebody who you know is part of the team that looks after you, whenever he or she sees you, the first thing they do is how you're doing. And that, to me, is what basically the right person, the healthcare professional, should be doing in every situation. So that sort of communication or that acknowledgement, whether it be physically, whether it be even just shaking your hand, whenever that was sort of viable to do, that sort of feeling that that person's being there for you is the best feeling that you can have as a patient. And I think that the different people I've came across, they've just got that gift where that sincerity is clearly abundant in that person's character, their demeanour, their efforts to make you feel the most important person, and not just the patient. Sometimes it's the person, probably most times it's the person, because they take care of their job, they do their job, they know they're very, very good and fantastic at their job. But these other small things are the things that matter to me, and they do that time and time again, which I find quite amazing compared to some of the other stories I hear from other patients that don't get the service I receive.
Thanks. And Pauline, what has mattered most to you?
I would say the same things, being seen as a human being, human to human. You know, we're not just a diagnosis. We're a whole being around this, with feelings and thoughts and life experiences and, being willing to see that. I remember always when I was in hospital and very frail at the time, and you know, sitting on a chair was proving to be the beads of sweat. This was after surgery. The beads of sweat were coming out of my forehead just from sitting on the chair. And I remember thinking, how am I going to go home and look after my three kids? And the doctors were doing their rounds that morning. And you know, the way they're at the end of the bed and everybody's talking about you, and it's as though you have no ears, but you're trying to hear everything, you know, and trying to interpret, and what does the look on their face mean, and this, that, and the other. And sometimes that can feel very impersonal, because you feel like you're kind of like the guinea pig that's there and they're trying to kind of experiment on you to know what to do. But I always remember this doctor coming you know, the crowd moved on to the next bed, but he came, one of the group came, and he bent down beside me on the chair, and he asked me, he said, "How's the baby?" You know, and I said, "Look, I don't know because I can't see her." And he said, "Well, you know what?" He said, "Let's get a photo of her, and I want to see her the next time I'm doing my rounds," you know. And I was afraid to look at a photo of her because I thought at the time when I was in hospital, I will fall apart entirely, you know. But his, it still affects me. Look, it's 9 years on. His seeing more than my ECGs and my blood levels and my whatever that morning, he saw a mother sitting in that chair without her baby. And he recognized how important that was, that she was recognized in that way. And that human to human connection is so vital. I think when it becomes a technical exercise, the power of medicine and the power of being a healthcare worker is lost. There has to be that human connection. And the communication there and the presence of mind to just take that extra minute. He wasn't with me that long, but it was just that extra minute. It was so powerful to me. I felt in that moment, this guy really cares. He's not going to let anything happen to me because he knows the severity of this. And ongoing, I would say, look, I've had mixed. I gravitate towards the ones that have that connection. I've had to God, it sounds terrible, but I've had to replace some healthcare people in my life at times because of the lack of that and maybe the complete opposite. I mean, I had a wonderful nurse, God bless her, who felt it was her job to tell me every side effect, possible side effect of every medication I had to take. And honest to God, I felt like I came out of the room thinking, well, there's just no point now, really. I mean, I'm finished. I remember her even telling me that there was some medication that I might get cataracts. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, am I going to be blind now as well as everything else? You know, suddenly there was another visual of this, you know, my cane and my oxygen tank going around together. So go with the positive. And I would say to healthcare professionals, please see the human being and connect with that human being. Don't just leave it to a technical conversation. Connect with the fact that they might have kids or they might be going through something else in life. I've recently gone through separation, unfortunately, my marriage. My cardiologist, when he met me, we spent most of the time talking about that. And you know what? That was better for me that day than anything he had said about my ejection fraction, you know, because he saw my being in that moment. So yes, please see the human being around the diagnosis.
Now, listening to you both, there have been many wee nuggets of wisdom throughout this conversation. But I think if those listening could take one thing from these podcasts, then I think see me, not my diagnosis. Is it? Now, the British Society for Heart Failure have launched the F-Word campaign. The aim of the campaign is to raise awareness of the symptoms of heart failure, so fatigue, fighting for breath, fluid buildup, to aid with early recognition of these symptoms, early presentation to health care professionals to aid in an earlier diagnosis, as well as raising awareness amongst healthcare professionals and policymakers of the need to recognise heart failure as a healthcare priority. So this is your opportunity, as part of that campaign, to have your voice heard. What would you like to tell the public about heart failure? Robbie, would you like to go first?
Heart failure is invisible. And it's one of the conditions where most people, if they have a physical disability, then you can see that. And then maybe some people can make allowances or can adapt how they would then approach that individual if they have to. But I think from a heart failure point of view, then because it's invisible, people just assume that everything's always okay and everything's all right. And physically, the needs of me as a person might not always be the same as what it was maybe 5-10 years ago. So for instance, the simple thing I remember, as you say, asking about getting a blue badge And then I was asked the question, why do you need that? I said, well, if you park in a space that's closer to going to the shops, then it's obviously a bit easier than walking up and downstairs or whatever. Then stranger, once I got my badge, I remember going shopping numerous times and parking in the disabled space, and you put your badge on the dash, and members of the public would then sort of see you getting out of the car and say to themselves, why is he parking in here? He's a quite relative young person looking at him. Then just the look from the people would be sort of questioning the reason why you would do that. So it's basically just recognising that sometimes you can't see whatever situation is causing that person to not be able to function as normal as what they would normally do, because it's not always visible. And the assumption, I remember also a situation, it was on, I think, the first holiday after I was diagnosed. We were on one of the sort of coach transfers going on holiday, and the bus was full, and there was numerous women and older people standing, but I had a seat. And the amount of looks I got from people because I wouldn't give up my seat, because I think Wendy even said to one person, my husband's got a chronic condition, then the eyes just turned away. It was a simple thing to say, but you felt as if that people were watching you and they're looking at you in a way that was not a nice way. So I think it's for people to understand that just because you can't see someone, their chronic illness, then breathlessness, fatigue, can sometimes be hidden, but that person is still feeling that on a daily basis. And that's what some people have to be educated about.
Thanks, Robbie. And Pauline?
Same. It's that you look normal, to be honest, I think it's a society issue that we need to get over, the fact that how people look and how they feel can be completely different. And whether that feelings are physical or emotional, we have a cover, and sometimes the cover can look shiny. I mean, God bless makeup and all these things. I find, we present a certain way to the world. And a certain way for our families. I've often thought, and particularly I mentioned earlier, recently there's been a separation here, which is conscious of the kids and that. You try to be as well as you can for your families, because you don't want them worrying. You don't want them bearing another layer of burden that, is mom all right? So we project this. But of course, beneath, there are days I feel okay. There are days I feel absolutely horrendous physically or emotionally. It's being conscious of that for everybody in our society. Look, how someone looks could bear no relevance. How many times do we see, unfortunately, suicide in society, and people say, God, they seemed fine. It's obvious that the human being can disguise very well. So, yeah, be conscious that you don't know what anybody else is going through. Be open to learning, people being open to ask as well. Sometimes people say, if you say you've heart failure, they'll say, to be honest, I don't know what that is. So, yeah, ask people, what does it mean for you? When you say you've heart failure or diagnosis. And I would also say two other things. Young people, and by young, I mean under 70, get heart failure. It can be as young as some people in their 20s, or maybe younger. And I would also say to women out there, because women, I think there's an expectation in some respects that if a woman gets ill, it might be breast cancer or it might be something else, that's sort of seen to be more of a woman's issue. But women's heart health is an area that's not just neglected by patients, but it's kind of neglected sometimes in the profession. I know a lot of women, the condition I originally had is 80% women. so many of them, when they present, are kind of assumed to be anxious or stressed instead of acknowledging that actually they've just had a heart attack. And so I would say again to the public, just be conscious that your heart, nobody's guaranteed. We think we are guaranteed that everything is going to be fine. We're not. So if you're feeling off and it's going on for a bit, consider it could be your heart. It could be whatever. And you need to get to a doctor and not dismiss it. And you just need to be checked out. So, yeah, it could be anybody's problem, you know, and we must all be conscious of that.
Absolutely. And, you know, you both highlight that heart failure can happen to young people. It's more likely to happen as we get older. But there are young people living with heart failure. And that's partly why it's so important to recognise those symptoms and seek help early. Now, Pauline, what would your message be to healthcare professionals?
My message is a bit like earlier, see the whole human being. Recognise that we are in an information age, that patients are intelligent people that can read and understand their own diagnosis. They have access to information. Sometimes they might even have more up-to-date information than the doctor, which might sound strange, but if particularly I'm speaking from the point of view of a rare condition, I mean, all people with a rare condition follow the research because our lives depend on it. And so the profession, I would say, needs to be open to the patient's knowledge and the patient's experience, not just in a token, I'll be polite and listen, but having a willingness to absorb. Because I've always said, you know, the profession has one side of the picture, but the patient has a very unique perspective and can teach, you know, I mean, I do a lot of talks as well to medical professionals, and they will often say, I never realized, you know, that this X, Y, and Z might be an element of that. I never thought about it. So do listen with an open mind and see the patient as your equal. They just have a different set of experiences and knowledge to you. And together, work as a team and work as two human beings working together. That's what I would say.
Thanks, Pauline. I think that's a very helpful thing to remember, that we all have access to healthcare information and advice that we didn't have 10 years ago. And so being able to ask questions about your treatment and, like you say, work together as a team is very important. Robbie, what would your message be to healthcare professionals?
Yeah, I think quite similar to say. I think to all healthcare professionals, please continue to look after my physical well-being as well as my psychological well-being, and always focus on me as an individual, not maybe not your typical heart failure patient, but to treat me as an individual and have specific treatments that are relative to me and my care. Talk to me as a person, probably in a language that I understand, and use the kind of language which is relevant to what they're telling me, but something that they're comfortable, that I'm fully understanding. I think in any consultation, always include me in the conversation, and especially if there's maybe two or three people in the room, then it's about focusing on me and asking my needs, whatever. And also if I'm maybe appear to be hesitant or unclear, then just probe a wee bit further to ensure that I do fully understand what I'm being told, and just double check that. And I think make sure that things like any potential new treatments or new medicines that are available, then always ask me if I'm open to trying them or testing them. And basically, I think the final question, which I'm probably asked all the time, then is there anything else I need to know? And I think that's enough then just to get the final part of the consultation complete, but at least they give me the opportunity to do that.
Thanks, Robbie. Another great point for us as healthcare professionals to consider new treatments, promoting involvement in research, as well as ending our consultation with the question, is there anything else you would like to say or would like to know? Now, finally, is there anything you would like to say to policymakers?
Yes, definitely. I'm not sure about the situation in the UK, but I know in Ireland the patient doesn't seem to be consulted very often in the process of developing any policy. It's all about the patient, but not yet there isn't a lot of involvement of the patient. In fact, sometimes it's almost as that we are so irrelevant to the conversation. There's nearly surprise that we should be involved from the get-go. So I would say, again, not tokenism, but actually invite patients for all kinds of conditions onto the groups that are set up to investigate, explore, be open to that knowledge as being of equal value, not just a kind of a last minute, or we can say we consulted with the patients. We're a key stakeholder here, folks. So, you know, we need to be there from the get-go.
And Robbie?
Yeah, I agree probably 100% what Pauline just said there. But I think that it is crucial that all patients, that if they wish to do so, then do get asked to be involved in specific trials or new treatments or new processes or new systems coming into heart failure processes. Fortunately enough, the last couple of years I've been part of various groups and organisations and attended various kind of functions that heart failure professionals are available. But I just hope that content and those discussions which heart failure patients have with consultants or healthcare professionals, then they are acted on. And whether new policies come in Scotland or Ireland or England, whatever, then the consideration is taken on board at the early stage to include patients. Because that everyday life that we have can sometimes be different for different people. Not just to take a general view of the population to say, well, not 1,000 people, then 900 but they're okay, so then the majority are going to be okay. Then there's going to be that odd percentage of people who've got some difficulties, and to take that on board that one size doesn't fit all, but just to make sure that you try and speak to as many people as you can at an early stage to make sure that any potential pathway that is taken or decisions that are taken to make policy, then all considerations are given as much as possible. Because without the patient's feedback, then it's crucial that that's taken on board to then decide which way the organisation, the company then takes their policy forward. And the simplest thing, by talking to someone, can make that policy change that might be crucial for the rest of the next generation.
So thank you both, not just for your time, but for your openness and honesty about what it's like to live with heart failure, and to you both for being advocates, not just for yourselves, but for others too, and actively being involved in the development of processes and pathways for positive change for heart failure care now and in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
If you have been listening and would like further information on heart failure, the F-Word campaign, or the work of the British Society for Heart Failure, please follow us on Twitter or go to our website at www.bsh.org.uk.